From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on March 26th when a local single mom was hospitalized with COVID-19. Sarah Madison had started to feel sick the previous weekend. She had a sinus infection. By Wednesday, the infection had moved into her lungs, and doctors sent her for a chest x-ray. Thursday morning, before her doctor's office even opened, she was called and told to get into Strong ASAP, and that began an experience that terrified her, frankly, and showed her how dangerous the coronavirus can be. Sarah is sharing her experience because she wants all of us to remain committed to reducing the spread of the virus, even as New York State joins others in slowly reopening economies and public spaces. Sarah is one of three people who have had COVID-19 joining us this hour to share their experience. We will welcome two of them now, and Sarah is on the line with us. How are you doing today, Sarah? Thanks for taking the time.
Hi, good afternoon. Today actually is a pretty good day. I was able to get out, get some groceries for myself and my kids. Still pretty tired most days. So I get out, I do one activity, I come back and I rest. Usually it involves a nap of some sort and light housework. But every day is still a challenge for me.
Well, let me just jump in and say, you know, I think the fact that our three guests are going to share their experiences from different age ranges, different backgrounds, I think will help illustrate. And we are not doing this to sensationalize the virus. We're not doing this to say this is exactly what would happen to anybody who gets infected. We know some people who get infected remain asymptomatic, but it is a good reminder that this is very real. And so, Sarah, I really am grateful that you're going to share your experience. Hello as well to Anita Spoor, who's on the line with us, who's going to share her experience. Hello, Anita. How are you?
I'm good, Evan. Thank you so much.
Well, and hello to Madeline Smith, who's also with us. Madeline, welcome. How are you?
Hi, Evan. I'm good. Thank you.
All right. So I'm don't ever really do this, but I think it will be instructive for our listeners. So let me just ask all three of you, and then we'll kind of work through your individual stories. But could you tell us your age and if you considered yourself as having any sort of pre-existing conditions? Madeline.
I'm 30, and I do have a slight immunocondition where I, like, pick up sicknesses a lot easier than most people. But other than that, I'm pretty healthy.
Okay. Anita?
I am in wonderful health, exercise every day. I'm in my 70s, and I have no pre-existing conditions of any kind.
Okay, and Sarah?
I'm 42, and I do have several pre-existing conditions.
So, Sarah, I'm going to start with your experience because that's how I opened the program. So this is the last week of March. You get a sinus infection. That weekend that you had the sinus infection, did COVID come into your mind yet, or did you think this is a run-of-the-mill sinus infection?
No, not at all. Honestly, I hadn't had any kind of cold or anything in probably over a year. And I'm thinking, it's a spring cold, no big deal. I was, you know, I was due, honestly.
Sure.
And with everything else going on, I have three kids, and kids pick up all kinds of things from school.
Oh, yes. So the next few days here, what's the progression? Because you had mentioned that by Wednesday, it had moved into your lungs. But, I mean, did it happen overnight? Was it fast? What was it like?
Usually when I get some sort of a cold thing, it always ends up in my lungs because one of my pre-existing conditions is asthma. So any kind of head cold always moves into my lungs. So I was just like, it's par for the course. No big deal. I always end up on some sort of inhalers and some sort of a more intense antibiotic.
Okay. What is the, you know, what was the 24 hours like from Wednesday into Thursday morning for you when you ended up getting told to get to Strong Hospital ASAP?
For me, that was pretty scary. I was using my nebulizer, my home nebulizer machine, the entire night. I couldn't lie down because I was completely congested. I couldn't catch my breath. My inhalers weren't working. I was having a hard time catching my breath. I just felt like I had a giant weight on my chest. And my honest thoughts that were going through my head was, I'm having the same issue that was happening to me several years prior, where I was going to end up back in the hospital for heart issues, which is kind of what led to a very long, detailed story that I don't need to go into.
Okay, but even at that point, you're not thinking COVID-19.
No, again, I'm not thinking COVID-19. I'm thinking I'm having the same issues from a prior illness, and great, what am I going to do with my kids? How am I going to handle this? Again, it's not COVID.
Mm. So that Thursday morning, they say, get into strong. You went into a mostly empty emergency department, and what happens?
Completely empty. Like, not a soul anywhere. No one in any rooms. No one in the waiting room. Like, ghost town. I bypassed the tent that was outside. I bypassed everything. They got me into an isolation room with doors, so not even, like, curtains. I had doors on my room. Honestly, the staff that was treating me were dressed like the characters from Outbreak with Dustin Hoffman. I was tested within 10 minutes of getting into the room. I was given masks. I was put on oxygen. I was given antibiotics via IV. I had blood work taken. I had the COVID test done. I was in a room up on the seventh floor within 2 hours, which, if you've ever been to Strong, you know that never happens. You pretty much get parked in the emergency department and you never leave. The staff at Strong was absolutely amazing. And they did everything they possibly could to make me comfortable, but they had to follow protocol. If I needed anything, they called me on the phone. They tried their very best never to come into the room because they couldn't risk exposure to themselves either.
They were treating you effectively as if you had COVID, whether you had it or not, before the result came back, and I understand why. And of course, you've got to interact in different ways, whether you've got questions or just to eat. How are they getting food to you?
When they were bringing the food to me, they dropped it inside the door. I had to get up out of bed to get it myself and then bring it back to the bed. At that point, I was still mobile enough that I could get it myself. And they gave me enough rope on my oxygen tubing to be able to get up and move around the room.
Mm-hmm. And you got your results the same night, is that right?
Yes. So I was tested shortly, like right around 10 o'clock, and I got the tests around 9 o'clock that night.
Did they call you to tell you? How did they deliver the news?
They actually had a nurse and doctor come in to tell me at the same time. It was terrifying. At that point, I had already sent my kids over to my ex-husband's because I was pretty sure I wasn't coming home once I got dropped off. I was pretty sure I wasn't coming home. And at which point, I had to start making phone calls. I had to call friends. I had to call my parents up in Canada. I had to call my ex-husband to let him know what was going on because the county had to get involved at that point because my kids had been around me, which meant that they were exposed. And then because my kids were exposed, that meant my ex-husband was exposed.
Mm-hmm. What was that conversation with the doctor and the nurse like? I mean, you know, did they tell you, hey, you've got this, it's positive, you know, we've got a plan in place? Were you nervous? Did you have a lot of questions?
Once they told me, honestly, I shut down. I just started crying because not for nothing. Once you hear COVID and with all the reports back in March, there was a lot of sensationalizing, a lot of, you know, you get COVID and it was a lot of you get COVID, you get put on a ventilator, and then there's not a whole lot else that you hear. You don't hear, you weren't hearing a lot of people are surviving this, people are doing this. And they're like, we have to move you. We have to get you off this floor. we have to get you into the negatively pressured room because you're sharing air with everybody right now. We have to get you into a different space. So they moved me off of 7th floor onto 3rd floor, which is the burn unit floor, mm-hmm. so that I was not sharing air with the rest of the hospital anymore.
So what is then, you know, once you kind of try to settle down a bit and absorb that information, I'm curious about two things. What becomes your mindset, and how did your symptoms start to evolve at that point?
Once I was able to calm down a little bit and think more clearly, it was more a matter of how are we going to treat this? How are we going to get me back to my kids? What was the treatment plan, which was managing the symptoms, making sure that I'm still getting air. And then what is going to be the prognosis long term? So it was protecting my airway and making sure that that all the symptoms were being treated properly. So I was already on oxygen. My oxygen level was coming back up. I was down in the low 90s, right around 90 at that point, mm-hmm. which is not terrible, but it wasn't great.
No, you want to be 95 or above, I think.
Yes, you do. So I was sitting at 90. By early morning, I started creeping back up. So I was getting better. The IV antibiotics were starting to work. I had been given an antifungal. So the pneumonia in my chest was starting to resolve a little bit. And I never had like a productive cough. I was coughing all the time, but I was never producing anything. It was never like a wet cough. It was just this chronic dry cough, and it was just miserable.
Yeah, that's what they say about the COVID cough. Just dry, and relentless, huh?
Yes, and I was just exhausted. Mm. And it was that point of exhaustion where you're just so tired you can't even sleep. And it was like this bone pain, and I just had this bone pain that, like, it hurt to lie down, it hurt to stand up, it hurt everywhere. So it was kind of like having mono, being in a car accident, having a sinus infection, having pneumonia, all wrapped up into one is the best way that I could describe it.
You obviously never went on a ventilator. And I am curious to know if you think about, you know, not that it's an enjoyable thought, but had you not gone in for medical care in person, do you have a sense for how bad this could have gotten, Sarah?
In all honesty, I think I could have gotten into an awful lot of trouble had I not gone in. If I didn't have such a wonderful medical team behind me that cares for me so very much, I think I could have been in a lot of trouble had I stayed home.
I know you said that the staff were kind of talking through walkie-talkies and really trying to their best to communicate while not having direct contact, or at least as little as possible. But you were also aware that there were other patients. I mean, I know much of the ED had been empty, but you start hearing about other patients, and you had mentioned to me before the program that you had heard about another patient who had passed away. I know that is horrible, and it was horrible for you. Were you able to sort of keep the idea at bay that, you know, I don't know who that person is. It's not me. That's not going to be me. Or what's the mindset when you start hearing about that?
On the 3rd floor, the entire staff is linked by open communication walkie-talkies. And unfortunately, during one of my checks, one of the patients did pass away. No names were ever mentioned, so I don't know if it was a male or a female, their age or their status, but one patient did pass away while the nurse was in my room. And it was pretty terrifying to hear this on the air while she was in my room. And I could just think about, you know, there's this one family that lost a loved one. I mean, my outcome was, you know, was very good. Yes, I'm struggling still, and it's probably going to be months that I'm still going to struggle, but I still have my life. I've got my kids. I've got my health. So I'm very grateful and very blessed.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one family that is forever changed by this.
So, Sarah, you were only in the hospital for a couple of days, and then you end up getting a chance to get home. I know you mentioned that really for 2 weeks it was mostly sleeping. And your friends came through. They delivered food through Grubhub or dropped it off on your porch, and I know that was key for you. But here we are now, maybe 5-6 weeks later, and you're still feeling it. Do you have an expectation that there will be long-term health effects from COVID-19?
From what my doctors have spoken to me about, it will probably be about a year for my lungs to recover. I will have scar tissue on my lungs. It's going to take several months for the exhaustion to go away. It's going to be a while for me to get back up to my activity level. I have 3 kids. We are a very busy family. My youngest is an all-star cheerleader. My middle child is on the autism spectrum. My oldest is a senior this year who's supposed to be graduating with her friends. We do a lot of things. And, a trip to Wegmans exhausts me and I need a nap afterwards. I am definitely not where I'm supposed to be.
We're talking to Sarah Madison, Anita Spohr, Madeline Smith, 3 women who have had COVID-19 and sharing their experiences to kind of give us a picture of just how real the disease is as we, as a society, work toward slowly in phases reopening and trying to live among sort of each other with this virus before a vaccine. And, we could be doing it this way for a year plus. We don't know. But I think that their experiences, while individual and every experience with COVID-19 is unique, is a chance for us to remind ourselves that confidence is good, overconfidence is maybe not so good. And later in the hour, I'll ask Sarah and all of our guests, how they feel about the idea of phased reopenings and the confidence that society may have. I know listeners have some questions as well. Let me turn to Anita Spohr, who, Anita, why don't you kind of work through your own experience, and what I don't know from your background, I've read some of the story, I don't know when your symptoms with COVID-19 started.
My symptoms began probably toward the end of March. The significant thing for me is that the symptoms were so diverse that I didn't recognize what was happening. There's been no way for us, no communication to the population of what the symptoms are and what to look for. They're very different than your previous guest. I had headache, nausea, diarrhea, absolutely no appetite, fatigue, loss of taste and smell, which is still persisting, by the way, and chest tightness. So these factors, and they faded in and out. It wasn't consistent for any of them except maybe the nausea. And I didn't know what I was dealing with at the time. I didn't know it was COVID-19. I was concerned. My great doctor and I communicated via a text message, and he was keeping on top of what was going on. But it came to the weekend. I think it was the first weekend of April. And that weekend, I sensed a difference. I had a heaviness in the chest. Breathing was not easy. I was wheezing considerably. And the doctor heard me on the phone and said, "You need to go to Strong Memorial immediately." I drove myself there. And the process of trying to do an evaluation began at that point. When I arrived, I went through a tunnel or tented area where I was absolutely alone, and these people all dressed up and completely from head to toe, took temperature, chatted with me a moment. When they realized the difficulty and the tightness in the chest, they immediately admitted me to the emergency unit. I went into a unit that was completely full at that time, and they put me into a glass cubicle, which was going to be my home for the next 10 hours, and proceeded with all of the testing, two blood tests, X-ray, EKG, starting of an IV, a number of things that I can't even recall at this time. They constantly took my temperature. They took my pulse. They took my blood pressure, as you would expect. But at that point, I didn't know what was going on. And I think while they suspected that I might be positive, that was never said, and I was never sure of what was happening to me.
Now, Anita, your experience, just the gamut of symptoms is, I think, a good illustration of how challenging this is for doctors. And I don't bring this up, again, to scare listeners into thinking that the next time any of our listeners have a headache or nausea or fatigue or diarrhea or any of these symptoms, that it is COVID-19. But reading about the way doctors around the world are learning on the fly with this, one of the challenges they continue to describe is just how diverse the symptoms are. You seem to have had most of them, including a toe infection that we're starting to see more and more.
Exactly. Yeah, I did get a toe infection. I didn't know what it was at the time. I treated it myself. I tried to bandage it and soak it and do the things that were, common sense. I didn't realize that that was connected to the virus. I later read that that was part of the symptomology. And, again, I think you're right, Evan. The symptoms are diverse. They're different for every individual. I think that's what makes it so difficult. And the saving grace of my experience of 10 hours at the emergency was, as I was leaving, they then gave me the COVID test. And I was allowed to go home. And I think the factors that influenced that is, first of all, I live alone, so I'm not transmitting it to anyone. And the other was that I had consented to the 4 weeks of quarantine. As it turned out, it was more like 5 that I stayed home and quarantined myself. But I think it was a necessary process in this. Now, 2 days after I was home is when I received the call from the New York State Department of Health saying that I had tested positive and that I should begin the quarantine period. The interesting thing about it is that they stayed on top of it every single day. I received a call from the Department of Health. They even visited me on one occasion. Not coming in, of course, but, checking on temperature, symptomology, how I was feeling, and I think they would have been here in a minute if there had been a problem. I can't say enough about that.
Listening to Anita and Sarah's experiences, and we're going to get Madeline's coming up here, this is the reason that we talk about healthcare workers as heroes during a crisis like this. They are learning about a disease that literally didn't exist 6 months ago. And they are treating people with kindness and care while trying to follow the best possible protocols and practices. Did you at any point, Anita, though, think, I'm a fit 70-plus-year-old, but mm-hmm. but at my age, given what we know so far about this, were you nervous about being home with it?
No. I really wasn't. I don't think I entered into a fear mentality at all. It was doable. It was workable. I had a wonderful neighbor that brought me several meals. I had a friend that, I had support and people that kind of looked out for me, and that was nice. And then I had a wonderful daughter that, called me on a day-to-day basis, or even sometimes twice a day. Those things sustained me. What is perplexing and very troublesome to me is that we are not doing the kind of tests that would protect the population. It is not happening. There is no way to find that. I later donated my plasma at the Red Cross. So they told me that would probably help 4 patients. And I'm jubilant about that. But I would love to know at this point whether I know I'm not contagious to anyone else. I'm back in the pool of the general population. I could pick up something else. But the fact is that I would like to know if I do indeed have the antibodies and how long that immunity will last.
Well, in our second half hour after we get Madeline's story, I'm going to ask Sarah, Anita, and Madeline their thoughts on if they consider themselves immune and if their own sort of habits will change. Before we get there, though, Anita, what is your day-to-day now? I mean, it's been 5 weeks plus, and, I'm curious to know as well the same kind of thing that Sarah explained. Do you have day-to-day symptoms is maybe the wrong word, lasting effects, and have doctors told you expect XYZ going forward?
I have no protocol for expectation. Currently, I do experience fatigue. It's been exhausting just psychologically to constantly be alone, and I have not ventured out. I did go to the store at one time, was appalled at some of the people that did not have a mask on, and I got in and got out as fast as I could. I stay home. I've gone out for walks, usually by myself, and if I went with someone, we kept our distance out in the air, but that's pretty much it.
Mm. I'm glad to hear, though, that Sarah and Anita are both, weeks in and past the peak of their infections and doing okay. Anita, one more question before we turn to Madeline's story. Was fever one of the main symptoms? I mean, I'm reading a long list of symptoms, but we haven't talked much fever. Was fever an issue for you?
I have never had an elevated temperature.
Huh.
That was astounding
Isn't
to me.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it is. It is. And it just shows a diversity of this. And I want Madeline and I and your next guest to be jubilant that we are the very fortunate ones.
Mm-hmm.
We survived, and we can give our knowledge, to the rest of the community.
Well, you just heard Anita Spohr, Sarah Madison. After our only break of the hour, we're going to ask Madeline Smith about her experiences, and then before the hour's out, I'm going to ask them about not only what they've learned, but maybe the message for all of us as we think about trying to live as a society before a vaccine is on the horizon. Let's get that only break right here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, Governor Andrew Cuomo gives his live daily briefing on the coronavirus. You hear that every afternoon right here. He typically starts around 11 or 11:30. Today he is down in Binghamton, so a little bit of a later start time as they got on the road to do the briefing from Binghamton. Governor Andrew Cuomo's live remarks coming up at 1 p.m. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. 3 women who have had COVID-19 sharing their stories this hour. The first guest in her 40s, the second guest in her 70s, Madeline Smith, is 30. Madeline, tell me about your experience with it and when you first had symptoms.
Hi. Well, I first
got sick on March 25th, actually. I remember it was March 25th because I had hung out with my friend who got it on March 12th, I think it was, but I obviously didn't know that she had it at the time. And so I was like, okay, if I can make it 2 weeks without getting it, then I'm like in the clear. And then I got it. So I did not make it the 2 weeks. I almost made it. I was working as a nanny. It was my day job at the time. And I had been pretty, for a week and a half, had only just been, I would walk to work and walk home. So I would see the little two-year-old that I was watching, and I would see his mom, and I would see my husband. But for about a week and a half, they were the only people I had seen. So I was like, okay, I think it's okay. I'm not, like, super worried. But then in the morning, we were playing and, like, just, you know, doing the normal when you're with a little kid, like, having fun, being crazy. And then I was like, oh, wow, I, like, feel really tired. I'm so tired. And I felt kind of like I had a fever. So I went and I took my temperature, and it was like 102. And I was like, oh, that's not good. And then my mouth started to feel really weird, and I couldn't like eat really. It felt very weird. Like I had no sense of taste. I had a stomach ache. I didn't really have any desire to eat. And so, you know, obviously I called his mom, and I was like, I think I should leave. And she was like, yeah, like get out of the house, please. So she came back, and I left, and I went home and I, you know, told my husband, and then I called the doctor, and my doctor was like, well, yeah, it sounds like you definitely have it, but you should just stay at home for 2 weeks. And I was like, okay, I guess I'll just do that. But then that was a Wednesday. By Friday, it was really bad, though. Like, basically what they were describing before, like I just had this really bad chest pain. It was so bad that I couldn't sleep. I felt like someone was like crushing me. It was really bad. And I couldn't breathe. I was having trouble catching my breath, taking deep breaths. So I went to the hospital, and there's a hospital that's like within walking distance of my apartment. So I walked there, and it's in Jersey City. So it's about 15 minutes outside of Manhattan. And by that point it was overrun. I mean, it was just really bad. They weren't letting anyone into the emergency room unless you, they really thought that you had a serious problem, because people were coming in like trying to get tested. Mm-hmm. And they were like, okay, you can't come in unless, you know, we really think that you have it. So they ask you a bunch of questions just when you first get there. And then they were like, no, it sounds like you actually have it. And I had been in contact with someone who had tested positive. So so they brought me in. They did the test, which is like horrible, because they stick something like up into your brain. It's horrible. So they did that.
Madeline, let me just interject and say, I mean, I'm not laughing at your experience with COVID-19.
No.
But we all have to do our best to handle this test, because the test is important.
I know. No. I'm so sorry. You should get tested. Everyone should get tested. I'm not trying to dissuade you. I'm just like being honest. It was not fun. Like, it was not a fun experience. They stick something up your nose. It's fine. You should do it. But it was not fun. This is the only thing I have to say. But I'm really, really thankful I got it. I'm really, really grateful I got it, because down here, especially in the New York City area, it's really hard to get. I had tried to get it at like a, they had set up a testing center, but they wouldn't call me back. I couldn't make an appointment. I think it's just really impossible to get, especially in New York City. So I'm really lucky that I got it, but it was unpleasant. So
okay. And so what's the timeline from test to, you know, sort of either treatment or getting results now?
They did a bunch of other tests for me, and I stayed in the hospital for about like 4 or 5 hours, and then they let me go, because they were like, your lungs are at like 94% capacity. So they were like, you're okay, you know. So they let me go. And then like 4 days later, they called me and they gave me the positive test results over the phone.
What were you thinking at that time? And I guess this is sort of a multi-tiered question, because, you know, you're 30. Mm-hmm. and
yeah.
I mean, I remember 30. It felt invincible. And, you know, yeah. There is this idea that this is not a young person's disease, or if it is, that it's not serious. Were you surprised? Were you thinking this can't be COVID? Were you thinking it shouldn't be me?
No, actually, I wasn't really that surprised, to be honest with you, because I had been, like, really out and about, honestly, up until the point where they were like, okay, you have to stay home. So up until about March 14th, I was pretty out and about. And I do comedy in New York City. So it's like every single night I would see so many people. And I think that, I think it just was running really rampant in New York City. So I wasn't really surprised that I got it. I was just worried about, how bad it would be, because, you know, some people who are 30 are like totally fine. And then I actually have a friend who was like really, really sick. So I just wasn't sure how bad it would be.
How long until afterward where you felt like, I'm over this?
Well, now I actually feel back to normal, but I feel like for about like a month, after about 2 weeks, I was like, oh, I'm good. I can like, you know, go for walks and like, you know, be a little bit more out and about. I stayed home for the 2 weeks. But even that, like going for a short walk down to the park by my house or something, I would be like a lot more tired out. It still had some chest pain. So I think I still was feeling pretty bad for about a month. And now I feel pretty much back to normal.
Okay. Do you consider yourself, Madeline, as probably immune? I mean, again, to be as journalistically sound as I can about this, as I ask all three guests this question, let me reiterate a few points here. The World Health Organization has said that it is reasonable to expect that if you have COVID-19 and recover, that you will have some level of immunity. There is not enough evidence to say how much or for how long. Dr. Anthony Fauci has said he would bet a lot of money that people who get COVID-19 and recover are immune for at least a year, maybe two, just based on past experiences with other viruses. But again, they need evidence to say so definitively. So, Madeline, do you consider yourself probably immune? Do you think, you know, I feel a little more comfortable if I've got to go to the store or go out?
Yeah, I definitely feel a lot more comfortable. Like, I think if I hadn't have gotten it, I would be way more nervous now, just because I do have a immune condition and I do pick up sicknesses really easily. So I do feel a lot more comfortable. However, like, when I left the hospital and I was talking to the doctor, they were basically saying the same thing. They were like, well, you're probably immune. You'll probably be immune after this. So that's good news. You can probably go out and about. But then they were also like, but we don't really know. So, you know, kind of like, good luck. We don't really know. So it was kind of up in the air.
Now, Anita, you've said you have not essentially operated as if you are immune. Is that right?
I'm sorry, I misunderstood your question. Say it again.
You are not going about your day-to-day as if you are immune from the coronavirus and that you can go do whatever you want. Is that right? You are not doing that.
I know that I cannot communicate COVID-19 to another person. Mm-hmm. Whether I can... Am I susceptible to picking up another virus or the flu? Yes, I think so. I think I now, just like anyone else in the population, susceptible to the common flu, a cold. They're all components of the COVID virus anyway. So I guess I react cautiously. I wear my mask. I'm not getting close to people. I don't have anyone come in the house. I don't want anyone visiting. I did visit with a friend this weekend, and we sat outside. That is the only thing I'm really comfortable with.
Okay. Sarah Madison, do you consider yourself immune?
No, I wouldn't consider myself immune. From the friends that I have in the medical community, they're saying that there are different iterations of the COVID virus, and we haven't seen the last of it, and that there will be more outbreaks. So I practice a lot more caution than the average person when I go out, and I try not to go out at all, if at all possible.
It's so interesting. I mean, for listeners who are thinking about, you know, what life may be like post COVID-19 infection, here are three women, and, you know, differing perspectives, but still wearing masks. I think wearing masks or facial coverings is a signal to the public that you care about people, that, you know, that you care about other people's health, not just your own. And I think that's great. And, you know, if you're walking down the street or you're in a park and you see someone not wearing a mask, you may get frustrated. And if they were to say, look, I had COVID-19, I'm good, nobody's wearing a sign that says that. So I think I really respect the fact that our guests are still very thoughtful about other people, even in public settings, because we don't know their experiences, nor do we know exactly what their experience confers for them. Sarah, for you, what do you think when you think about reopening the economy? I mean, my parents live in Ohio. They have a lot more reopening starting on Friday. Here in New York State on Friday, we have the first phase, at least in three different regions, including Rochester, Finger Lakes. So that means, a limited number of businesses. And within the next couple of weeks, we could see more. What do you think, Sarah? I mean, are you feeling confident about that? Are you concerned about complacency? What would be your message on that?
Well, in all honesty, I am already seeing complacency. A lot of people, when I do go out in public, I'm seeing people not wearing masks over their nose. So it's like not wearing a mask at all, in all honesty. I'm seeing people not wearing masks, period. I do support reopening. We do need to get back to work because we can't all live in our houses all the time. It's like not letting your kids learn to ride a bike. It's like not letting your kids go to college. These things have to happen. But I think we need to be very cautious about how we reopen, about how we approach this.
Okay. Anita, how do you feel about it?
I think what needs to be done and what concerns me is testing. I would love to see an antigen test, which is a test that would tell whether we have antibodies. At that point, we'd be able to at least assess what we're dealing with. Right now, we're traveling blind. We have no idea what is the total scope of this in our community or how to deal with it. We don't have that information. I think very much that this community has to do some economic change because people are suffering. They cannot pay their rent. They cannot pay their mortgage, et cetera, buy food. That is a serious problem. But to go headlong into restoring our life as it was pre-COVID is dangerous. And I think is going to really have a detrimental effect on the future.
So before I get Madeline's thoughts on that, let me just follow up with a little bit of context on testing that Anita is talking about here, because every day the testing picture changes a little bit. I mean, every country in the world just about is trying to increase their testing capacity. And the United States basically started trying way later than most. I mean, we spent about 6 weeks doing close to nothing. And so as a result, we spent all of March and most of April way, way, way behind most countries of all different sizes in terms of per capita testing. We're not talking raw numbers. We're a big country. We're talking about the percentage of the population that you can test. Well, today, the United States is essentially middle of the pack. We still lag Germany, but Germany used to be lapping us by 2 to 3 times per capita. Now it's about Germany's testing about 25 to 30% more than we are. There are other countries, that are close to double, but for the most part, we're middle of the pack. We're doing okay. But even that picture is a little bit out of focus, because when you have a country as big as the United States with this many people, there's going to be places where you can test more easily and more rapidly, and there's places where there's not hardly any testing happening at all. So to Anita's point, depending on where you live in this country, the testing picture may still be very, very different. And that's the result of just a long delay in coordinating any sort of a national strategy and leaving states and regions kind of on their own to figure out how to do this. So based on that, Anita, is it your feeling that until there was sort of uniform testing, and it was 2 months ago last week that President Trump said anyone who wants a test can get it? That, of course, is still not true. Should that be the standard to you? I mean, how much more testing do you think is realistic?
I think we should be able to set up testing sites to find out where this community is before we can open every door with confidence. I think confidence is going to be something that's in the distant future. I think that according to what I have read and seen, we are fifth in the world as far as testing is concerned. And here we are, the most advanced culture in this world, and we cannot accomplish this one feat that would be the salvation for our population. We cannot find out where we are and whether it's safe to reopen.
Yeah, and one other note on testing. Wuhan, the city in China where the virus assumed to have originated, they announced some rather remarkable statistics this week. And by the way, these are much more actual statistics, not question. I understand why people question data out of China, and I share that suspicion that we haven't seen a complete picture from China fully. But this week, we do know that there are half a dozen to a dozen new cases of COVID-19 in Wuhan, in the city of Wuhan. And as a result, the Chinese government announced a plan to try to get all 11 million people in the city of Wuhan tested by the end of next week. Can you imagine that? That is a different level of testing and speed, because essentially they're saying, if this thing's back, we want to know where it is. And if it's not, you know, we want to be able to continue to live our lives. But they have capacity that we do not. So that's just a remarkable difference in scale. Madeline, for you, when you hear about reopening in different parts of the country, what goes through your mind having had COVID-19?
I wholeheartedly agree with everything that Anita was saying about testing. I think that that's incredibly important, and we as a nation have completely dropped the ball, failed on that. We haven't provided enough. I also think, especially down here in the New York City region, it's very disturbing to see that the people who are most affected are usually people who live in the most poor regions. I mean, mm-hmm. You see that the Bronx is extremely affected. That's like poor people. It's poor people, more people of color. And I think that we need to take their lives seriously. I don't think that we should just be like, well, who cares? I mean, we need to take that very seriously. And I understand that it's frustrating. Nobody wants to be inside. And for me, I lost all of my shows, which was about 50% of my income. And then I also lost my day job. So it is very hard. And I understand that that's very hard. And we need to, you know, get the economy going again. But I don't think that we should do it if people's lives will be lost. And I think that we need to, you know, take people's lives seriously. And we need to see if it's really safe to reopen yet or not. I do think that a soft reopening, like in parts of New York State, like Rochester, where things are improving, I think that's good. But for New York City, I'm just not sure. I'm not sure when that's going to happen and when it can happen safely.
Yvonne writes to the program to say, "What wonderfully articulate women. Thank you for sharing their important, informative stories." And I echo that. And so as we get ready to close the hour, I'll ask all three just for some final thoughts that you want to leave with the community, maybe about 30 seconds apiece. Sarah Madison, as we think about, I think you're right. You know, society can't operate this way into 2021. But that also doesn't mean that if we, quote unquote, reopen, that we can go exactly back to where we were before. And I want to know what you want to leave with this community having had COVID-19.
My last thought would be just remember to be very kind to each other. We're all under an extreme amount of stress. Please remember to take other people's thoughts and actions into consideration when you're out in the public. Try and remember to give everybody else a little bit of grace.
What a beautiful message. Anita?
I think I have cautious optimism about our future. I think definitely the expertise in the medical community, even at the federal level, can accomplish getting a vaccine. Once that is completed and people on a wide spectrum can be inoculated, I think then we can go forward with full reactivation of our life as it was.
Okay.
In the meantime, reach out to people, love them, be there for them, give them your help, your caring. That's all that I ever needed as well.
Wonderful. Madeline?
I agree. I think it's really important to reach out to other people, be there for your friends and family. It's a hard time, and I'll be happy when comedy starts back up again. But until then, I'm just glad that we're taking all the precautions necessary.
Madeline, I think your perspective helps a lot of people, and I'm really grateful for your time. Good luck to you, and thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
That's Madeline Smith. Anita Spoor. Anita, thank you for your story, your perspective, powerful words. Thank you for being with us this hour.
A joy to be with you, Evan. Thank you.
That's Anita Spoor. And Sarah Madison, best of luck to you. I know challenging times. I'd like to think we're going to come out stronger somehow on the other end of it, and I'm really tremendously grateful for your perspective. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you very much, Evan. You have a great day.
Wonderful conversation with Sarah Madison, Anita Spoor, Madeline Smith, three women who've had COVID-19. Great perspective. And as we head toward the top of the hour, we are about 2 minutes away from Governor Andrew Cuomo's daily live briefing. It's usually a little earlier, but today, a little bit later start. He's down in Binghamton, and you're going to hear that in about 2 minutes right here on WXXI, WEOS.